I was talking about this on an episode with Maggie recently, where I contend that I'm sure, like you, like you're talking about, when Scorsese watches Goodfellas, he watches it and he goes, "This movie's not perfect."
Oh, all he sees are the flaws.
Right, and it's just like, no, 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 you don't understand. Like,
yeah,
this movie is perfect.
Right.
Yeah. No, I, and that's the thing about the Beatles that I think a lot of us don't realize is that story. Where it's like, I don't think very much of my own music. It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
What are you, fucked in the head? Like, come on.
It's heartening that they're not like, yes, it is the greatest thing ever. And Lennon kind of suffered a little bit of that. But yeah, I mean, how else are you going to look at your work? Like, I was trying real hard. Like, my favorite Bob Dylan song of all time is Tangled Up in Blue. And it's long and rambling. It goes everywhere and it's fun. And he's like, someone interviewed him years later, like, going track by track on an album, and they brought up that song, and he was like, yeah, it like spilled out of me, but like, I think it's just too unwieldy, and I wish I had just pared the whole thing back. And I'm like, no, dummy, like it's good because of that.
He feels critical about Tangled Up in Blue.
Yeah.
Wow, that is surprising.
I'm sure he's critical of everything he's ever done, you know, like, oh, if I'd only turned the phrase this way instead of that, like it would have.
Well, and that's the, I mean, again, as someone who's never made anything so important culturally, I guess, and may never, more than likely, probably.
Yeah.
It's hard to even, like, think about what that's like, to, like, not have that frame of reference, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, what kind of frame of reference would you really have if you were like, I made Goodfellas? And someone comes up to you and they're like, I love it. And you're just like, yeah. Like, what do you say to that, right? Like,
well, you say thank you.
Right, but you know what I mean. Like,
thank you. Yeah, I cannot.
Like you said, they can never.
I appreciate your appreciation of it, but it was not as important to me as it will ever be, or will ever be to me as it was to you, other than as a creation. Like,
well, and like you said, I mean, there's also this thing of they'll never be able to watch it the way we watch it.
Certainly not.
The real question,
I mean, you know, I'm sure with Remove, you can like sit and watch it and tend to forget all the bullshit, but that bullshit's always going to be there, right?
Right. Right. And it's always going to be in the back of your head, just like gnawing away.
Yeah.
The question I have for you is, do you think Bob Balaban watches My Boyfriend's Back and thinks about it critically?
I think he went to the premiere and then never watched it again, but I don't think this movie had a premiere.
I was going to say, did this movie premiere anywhere?
Probably had a cast and crew screening.
So on this episode of the Culture Cast, Father Malone and I, Father Malone of Dark Destinations.
Hello, listeners of the Culture Cast world.
Culture Brigade. Yeah. We're going to be talking about the final movie for Zombie Month. We're going to be talking about the Bob Balaban directed My Boyfriend's Back.
Hey, Missy. I just wanted to say you look really nice today in a physically perfect, newly available kind of way.
Thanks. Extinguish all talking. Now, who can tell me how heroes are created? Gerald?
Well, that's a tricky question. I don't think heroes are born. I think they're made. They're normal men faced with extraordinary circumstances. My personal hero is Jane Goodall. When she was born, she didn't know anything about apes and their culture. But as she grew, she studied really hard.
Hey, Tiger.
You talking to me?
Mm-hmm. I know that you've been really concerned lately that you're still a virgin and you don't have a date to the prom.
And that you're sexually stupid.
But those things, they mean nothing to me. I love you just the way you are.
Oh, I see. I'm dreaming.
Fairview Gymnasium, the site of Johnny Dingle's most ambitious sexual challenge to date.
Which probably didn't have a premiere.
most likely not. Cast and crew screening. I mean, come on. Disney made it.
That's true. It is a Buena Vista film.
You know what? At the time, I think Disney owned El Capitan. They probably had a premiere at El Capitan. Just because they owned the theater.
That's fair. Well, I will tell you, though, I had never seen this film before. Father Malone, we'll get to it in a moment if you had seen it or not. But this is a pick from Mike White. So.
Oh, is it?
It is.
Wow. Okay.
So where does that push this for you? Every zombie film this month was a Mike White suggestion.
This doesn't make me feel good about Mike White. That's what.
What the fuck?
This. Okay.
There's no other movie like it. I'll tell you that much. But you know what? I think there's a reason for that.
I think there is a movie like it. We'll get to that.
Oh yeah.
Hmm.
Did It too only have a cast and crew screening?
Probably, but that's just because that they were having trouble with the studios and stuff. But yeah,
that's fair. So this film is directed by Bob Balaban, written by Dean Laurie, and it stars Andrew Lowry.
Oh, isn't he great?
As Johnny Dingle, a actual name of an actual character in a movie, who dies, becomes a zombie, and then this girl that he wanted to take to prom said yes to him before he died. So he comes back to life, folks.
That's the power of love.
Da-da-da-da. Yes. It's not the power of a good idea or the box office, though.
Wow.
This movie was a bomb when it came out.
I remember it bombing.
Yeah. So, Father Malone, tell me a little bit about your personal experience with one of the true cinema classics, My Boyfriend's Back.
I walked out.
No fucking way. Did you really?
Yeah.
Do you remember when you walked out?
What scene?
Yeah, because there's got to be a moment. You don't just pick to walk out unless you're like, I got to go do something else.
Yeah, it was once I realized we weren't going to have a lot more Austin Pendleton, I left. After the first doctor scene, when it picked up in quality, because Austin Pendleton is just so naturally funny, and I realized where the movie could go, and then it went right back to where it meant to be in the entire thing. And I went, okay, I don't need to see the rest of this movie. And this is, of course, so it's 1993, it came out, so I'm 20 years old. And my favorite filmmaker is George A. Romero, and my favorite movie is Dawn of the Dead. I'm a bit of a zombie nut. I know everyone is these days, but back in 93,
the right kind of zombies. You're a fan of the right kind of zombies. Walking Dead, the people are the zombies. Okay. Yeah. Don't you get that?
I've said this before, but like growing up, loving zombies. If somebody were to say to you, like, what's your favorite kind of movie? And you just say zombie movie, you might as well have been saying, I live on the moon.
Right.
Like, so the fact that we were getting a zombie movie, from kind of a major studio, and it was a comedy, and I love horror comedy like American Werewolf in London and Evil Dead 2 are pretty much the best of those. But so I was not stoked to see the movie because I saw the trailer, but like I'm still going to give it a chance. And then I ended up not giving it the rest of the chance. So today was my first time to actually watching the film beginning to end. And ultimately, you owe me $4.
Wait. How do I owe you $4?
Because I couldn't make how we were going to do that work.
God damn.
And so I ended up buying it from Amazon Prime.
Oh.
For $4. I rented it. Thank
you
God.
And I are the only people this year to have rented this film. You know,
I was thinking that as I was watching it, like suddenly there are two clicks on the on the Touchstone server for this particular movie.
Andrew Lowry is cashing his residual check up.
I was about to say
$2.
Somewhere Andrew Lowry's very excited to getting his next check.
Has he done anything else? No.
He did a couple other things and then cashed out. Same with the girl, Tracy Lind. Eesh.
But what's funny is there's a handful of people in this movie that didn't cash out. haven't cashed out.
And I think that has to do with Balaban, who is one of the great character actors working then, before, and today. I'm certain because this was a studio movie that there was a negotiation about who was going to be the lead, those two kids. I think they thought they were getting a couple of breakout stars. And beyond that, they didn't care how the rest of the movie was cast. So Balaban stacked the deck with some fucking heavy hitting character actors, Edward Herman, Mary Beth Hurt, Paul Dooley, and as I mentioned before, Austin Pendleton, who you can't get enough of that guy,
Cloris
as far
Leachman?
As I'm concerned. Who?
Cloris Leachman.
Cloris Leachman is in the movie. J.O. Sanders, who I think gives the best performance in the movie as the dad, the cop dad.
Yes, yes.
But endlessly funny, just so serious and deadpan. You can tell who the real actors are because they understand the tone of the movie is to play it as straight as possible. Unfortunately, Balaban does not support them at all and either encouraged or did not rein in his two leads and all the sort of teen characters around them who are so comic book over the top. Do you think that, by the way, that comic book framing device that we get for this movie, that it's introduced as a comic and we keep getting comic panels throughout, was that a last second thing? I'm thinking it was, once they realized that this movie had zero tonality, a consistent tonality to it. They're like, this is crazy. It's like a comic book. Slap some comic book pages on it.
I don't know. I was wondering that myself because it is so around. It's a wraparound.
Right. It's a wraparound, but we get panels within, as an intro to a scene for some reason at the beauty parlor.
Right. I would assume so. You should definitely check out J.O. Sanders' Wikipedia page. That man has the greatest Wikipedia photo of any actor I've ever seen.
I think you sent it. I'm going to have to look at it now. Dun, dun, dun. he looks like swollen Will Ferrell.
He looks like he's taking a shit.
I love J.O. Sanders. He's great. He's great.
He just looks like he's taking a shit. Some other people that are in this movie randomly.
Mm.
Matthew McConaughey.
Matthew McConaughey in his first role, quote unquote.
Quote.
Evidently, Renee Zellweger cut from the movie, had a scene in it as well.
Which is weird given that her and McConaughey worked together on Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3?
3. 4.
Yeah. 4.
3. 4. It was four. The Next Generation or whatever it was. Yeah. And this, a month after this movie came out, Dazed and Confused came out, which they were both in as well.
Right. And also Matthew Fox and Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Philip Seymour Hoffman's big head sort of lunges into the frame, and I'm like, whoa, what? Wait a minute.
When Philip Seymour Hoffman showed up, oh boy. He was also billed as Philip Hoffman. Yeah. Which is how you know how unknown he was. They don't give a shit about your middle name.
Here's how convincing Philip Seymour Hoffman is as an actor. Because he was in this and then he was in Twister, pretty close to it. And I fucking hated him in both, right? Not realizing that those characters were idiotic and annoying. And that's exactly how I was supposed to react. Because then, obviously, he's one of the greats,
Right. I like him in Twister.
Oh, that character. I just want to punch him in the face, man. It's the writing, but he's playing the writing as written. So
that's fair.
Yeah.
He's not good in this.
For a dunderheaded oaf sidekick.
The affectation that he's using, it's too much.
It is. It might be a little actorly, but he's not the worst thing going here.
No, that would be the leads.
That way, in specific, Tracy Lynn, who is just poor.
Yeah.
Provocatively poor.
What's funny about her character is I don't
nothing.
Even... Nothing. Nothing, yeah.
There are no laughs.
That's fair.
Tracy Lynn.
What is sad is that you get the sense that she is out of her depth.
Oh, yeah. Instantly.
Yeah.
Well, as soon as she opens her mouth, it's like, oh, there's nothing going on behind her eyes. This is... You know, she's in a community theater production of something. And, next to her is Edward Herman.
Well, that's the problem. The two leads end up being, look, I don't know if this movie would have been fixed if it had had better leads cast. It still would have been
Imagine Tom Everett Scott in the lead role. Right around the That Thing You Do time, utterly charming.
I still think that this movie's plot is too goddamn convoluted and tonally all over the place.
100%. This movie feels like a movie written by a sitcom writer.
I think my issue with the movie really isn't the acting. It starts
the script.
It's the script. It's awful.
The script is not good. It has some great ideas, honestly.
Sure.
And that's a novel idea. Yeah. And had they played to those ideas instead of cramming it into the same old boy wants girl, boy tries to get her 1950s bullshit. And speaking of 1950s, if you hadn't told me this was 1993, I would have assumed this was a period piece. Obviously, they couldn't afford the costumes to do it full, but that's what the whole thing feels like with it, you know, this comedy of manners and culture clash, you know.
The character's name?
Dingle.
I mean, that just sounds like a 50s or 60s.
50s thing, yeah. I mean, it feels like a parody of 50s movies without any sort of specific genre other than, like I said, like culture clash, kind of like Guess Who's Coming to Dinner kind of a thing.
Right.
Which, by the way, also could have worked if they had established a world where they were undead and they were living and they were side by side and had to deal with each other. Like, I think they have ended up doing that with that movie Fido. Ultimately, the main problem with the movie, to me, is... And we've talked about this a lot because we talked about these kind of episodes a lot when we did our Tales from the Crypt podcast, is the love triangle. Here we've got a look, and this one falls into the trap of, I think, 99% of romantic comedies. The triangle is faulty. Like, it's a good guy and potentially decent girl, and then a dickhead is the third part of the triangle. And the fact that what makes me insane about these is the fact that the girl is even interested in the guy at all makes her a lesser character than our hero deserves. You know?
She's interested in the dickhead?
Yeah. Like,
that's fair, yeah.
The fact that there is a debate in this movie of who she's going to the prom with, all of that subplot needed to go. This movie should have been about two people who were in love from the beginning. And he dies trying to save her and comes back for her. Like, I mean, they say it pretty explicitly at the end. They give you all the subtext in a speech at the fucking cemetery. But like the idea that he died for her, came back for her, and now is fading away. That's something. There's a fucking good movie there, right? If they didn't want to just make it, we got to save the orphanage kind of same cliche right. plot, you know?
Poor, like, Bob Dishy, huh? Here, just like give the movie's like complete entire message away, please.
Yeah, I mean, what a scene, huh?
I mean, it was trying to be something.
You know, like right around the same time, a movie came out called Cemetery Man with Rupert Everett, which was really good about zombies and like this cemetery worker who had to keep putting the dead back in the ground. Like there were other movies around this time period who were tackling the themes that this movie was trying to just kind of touch on that were doing it so well that it makes these errors even more glaring as far as where it was going. Like I said, I think there was a good movie in here, but.
Well, and I think to your point, there's this weird issue that this movie has that most movies don't, where the setting doesn't reflect the narrative. Why make this movie if it's not set in the 50s?
Yeah, I mean,
it's not like the Brady Bunch movie where you're hanging a hat on people out of time. This is I'm assuming this is in LA somewhere. Why are people acting like this?
Right.
It's clearly fucking shot in LA. Like, yeah. Very obviously shot in L.A.
Well, some of it. Obviously, some of it is Texas, given the Texas wattage on display here with McConaughey and Renee Zellweger. And it should be pointed out, Paul Dooley, national treasure, Paul Dooley, his number one henchman was Edwin Neal, who was the original hitchhiker in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre back in 73, 74. Just odd to see him standing there next to Paul Dooley.
That's fair.
But welcome.
It's weird to see Paul Dooley being eaten in a dream sequence.
Well, you know, Paul Dooley's
not, that's not like explained at all.
Yeah. Why bother?
Who gives a shit anyways?
Yeah, man.
Like 10 people went to the movie and only 9 of them stayed through the whole thing.
I would say like this movie like made no sense and they didn't care, but they actually take great pains to explain everything with that fucking epilogue. Jesus Christ.
Well, and they have Austin Pendleton's character trying to like explain everything that's going on top of everything else.
Yeah, but he's really good. Like all of his scenes are really funny.
Austin Pendleton is great.
Yeah, I mean he enlivened it. Dun dun dun.
Remember it's a zombie joke. Remember when he played that character, the same character in Tales from the Crypt?
Yes.
Right.
And he was great there too.
Yeah.
He's just so odd. Like you kind of can't stop watching him. His sense of rhythm and timing when it comes to comedy is so, like, he can take any sort of throwaway line and give it something. So, you know, maybe they should have cast him as the lead. Maybe they shouldn't have had it be a teen movie at all. Just take all these awesome supporting actors, run and make a better movie.
And he was in Christmas with the Cranks.
He was as Santa Claus. And look, that is a movie I genuinely despise, but I recognize that his stuff in it is actually interesting.
Why do you despise it? Because of Tim Allen?
No.
Do you like
Tim Allen? I despise it because it is the most arch, wrong-headed take on the holidays I've ever seen, where these Nazi-like neighbors are like screaming at them to put up their fucking Christmas decorations and like hunting them down. And like everyone in town is just like shocked and appalled that they're not going to be festive as everyone else. It's like, it's what I don't like about the holidays in general, like writ large. Like, let these people go do whatever the hell they want. Who cares? Plus there's this weird, I don't know why we're talking about Christmas with the Cranks. but I will continue because the sort of insane eyed devotion Jamie Lee Curtis has for her daughter in this movie is like, it's genuinely frightening. Like, oh my God, she's coming. We've got to get the tree up. Like, what is happening here? Are you not adults? Wasn't she in the Peace Corps? Who cares if you're not going to have eggnog for 1 year? Jesus Christ.
Ladies and gentlemen, I believe I struck a nerve. I believe I struck a nerve here with my.
You did with that one movie. I know. Listen, Austin Pendleton.
Dan Aykroyd's in it.
I know.
That makes it extra worse.
No, that's the part that hurts with that movie. I hate everything, and then I watch Aykroyd, who's doing kind of a funny performance, but he's doing that Chicago accent that I do not like. Like he forgot how to do Elwood Blues somewhere around, say, 85 or something. And like he decided to buy into what is the funny Chicago accent. Like, I don't know. That movie, dude. That movie.
Yeah, I know.
It's worse than the movie we're reviewing right now. I'll say that.
Really? You think so?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, this movie has some laughs.
Why give this film this title if it's not going to be a period piece?
Again,
I don't get any of this. Like, I don't even get the base problem with this movie is they didn't know what they were doing when they stepped onto the set, is what it seems like.
They didn't. And, you know, and I'm sure Balaban got the gig because of his movie Parents back in 89, which is set in the 50s and is sort of a parody of the sort of notion of suburban paradise, where this kid is being raised by cannibals effectively. That movie was a little slow in places, but interesting and focused on it, you know, it, trying to emulate like a David Lynch sort of thing. Here, I think Balaban stepped into a situation where it was like, here's the script, here's your cast, fill out the cast any way you want and make this happen, and then buckled under which way to go, you know?
Jesus. The movie you just described sound 10 times better than this movie.
Parents, it's worth a watch.
Randy Quaid, huh?
Randy Quaid, who's great in it, by the way. He's great in the movie.
Wait, you don't have to convince me Randy Quaid's great. My favorite film is Free.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm saying like everyone only thinks of him either as Cousin Eddie or the lunatic, which he's both, certainly. But like, he's put in some really solid dramatic performances, and like those get overlooked now, and that's a shame.
If I were to say Randy Quaid to you, free association, what do you think of? Randy Quaid.
Well, now I'm thinking of Parents, unfortunately.
Before that, what would
The last detail comes to mind with Nicholson, like where he's the sort of the prisoner. Okay, really, when I think about Randy Quaid, it's a comedic performance. It's the only good thing in my dear beloved Alan Arkush's horrible sequel to Caddyshack 2. Randy Quaid plays the Rodney Dangerfield character's clone lawyer, Jackie Martunian or Jackie Mason, something Artunian. Like, he's his lawyer, and he's on the phone, and he's so manic and crazy in the role. And he's on the phone and he's talking to a guy, and the guy, and he's like, okay, well, when can we expect you there? Oh, hard to say. Well, when is my shipment going to arrive? Oh, that's hard to say. Tell me, is it as hard to say, help, there's a crazy man in my office with a flamethrower? Great line, great performance. That's what I think of when I think of Randy Quaid.
Man, I would have thought you had said Eliza C. Scuggs.
No, I don't. That came around same time as this movie, right?
Yeah, it sure did.
Yeah. See, the it kind of
high concept, like, man.
This movie clearly should have come out in 85. It is a parody of the 50s. Oh, yeah. And like it was being so surpassed at this point as far as dark comedy and pointed comedy.
Same year, serious. Man. Same year.
There you go.
That's the crazy thing about this movie is who in 1993 would have found this movie funny?
Who in 1993 thought high school was still like this? Heathers came out 4 years before this fucking movie and told everyone exactly what high school was like. Stop doing your fucking fantasy of your childhood fucking from the 50s or 60s or 70s. Like, that's gone. If you're going to set a movie in the present day, actually John Hughes it and like maybe go hang out on a mall for a little while. They don't even have malls. I don't know. A chat room maybe. I don't know. I'm an old man.
I like that. I'm an old man. Do you know the other things that Dean Laurie has worked on?
I do, actually.
Yeah, as do I.
A lot of TV, including the new Harley Quinn television series. I don't know if his episode was any good, but that's a solid TV program.
Yeah.
And he also was clearly the darling of Sean Cunningham around this time period, right around the early 90s, where he had him write not only this, but the Jason Goes to Hell flick. Equally bad. Yeah. I don't know which is worse. Like, which would you have? If I said you have to watch one of the two Dean Laurie penned films for Sean Cunningham at this period, which would it be?
I've never seen Jason Goes to Hell, so.
Well.
And that's, you know what? I didn't even think about this movie being produced by Sean Cunningham. Wow.
Mm. Yeah.
Huh. That's strange.
He's not the greatest judge of talent, that Sean Cunningham guy.
No. I don't know. Say what he you will
lucky.
About.
This
say
is a guy who got lucky.
Say what you will about Friday the 13th.
He got lucky. That's what I'm saying about it.
Yeah, I would agree. It could have been any one of those other movies.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
He didn't
got lucky.
He didn't create Jason anyways. That was Victor Miller.
That was Victor Miller as proven in courts.
Unfortunately, you can't use the name Jason Voorhees, but hey.
Yeah. C'est la vie, c'est la guerre.
I have the rights to Friday the 13th. Just not the character, Jason Voorhees.
So now we can set it in a cabin in the woods and like everything that's already been parodied to death, and your IP is essentially pointless at this point.
Yeah, I have no fucking earthly idea what the hell happened to Friday the 13th, but man.
Do you mean in general?
I'm just saying, in general, I guess. Man, what a ride that franchise has been on. I guess no worse than Nightmare on Elm Street.
No. I mean, look, this was fresh territory. There hadn't been a major horror film franchise as crazily successful as those movies. So there was no handbook on what to do and not to do. But, you know, they pretty much hashed out what not to do for the rest of us. In case we find ourselves in similar environs.
Friday the 13th, 3D.
That's the best one.
The true best one, yeah.
It is the best one, 100%.
You think so?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Three is the perfect Friday the 13th movie. It's got Jason with the mask. The teenagers are just annoying enough that you like kind of enjoy their killing without hoping for them to die. Right. Like it kind of became later on. Like, you know, there's still a couple characters to like. It's got some good effects in it. I like that Jason in particular. The build of that guy. Like I like that movie. Plus. It has what none of the others do, which is that disco version of the theme, which is pretty spectacular.
That's fair.
I don't know. I don't know who the movie was made for either. Like, you know,
like you said, all these other big comedies had come out around the time that had a better finger on the pulse of the time. And yeah. I'm not saying you can't in the 90s make a period piece about the 50s or 60s. You can.
Well,
and they did.
I'll mention the movie, which came out a few years before this. A movie that understood that it should have been just a skewering of the 50s and pretty much nothing else. And that was Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. That movie is very much just a takedown of the 50s. I thought, and I like that movie, but even when I was watching it, I was like, are we really still taking down the 50s? But maybe I was just a kid who was sick of our parents and grandparents telling us about how great the motherfucking 50s was. But by then I was pretty well over it.
That's you know, fair. I love that movie.
Yeah, it's
my wife loves that movie more than I do. I mean, she has a shelf.
So by extension, you love that movie.
Well, I love that movie because it's not a bad movie. It's actually a good movie.
Yeah, it's, well, Cassandra Peterson is just so effortlessly, you know,
Elvira.
Yeah, she's so watchable and fun, you know, like how can you not enjoy whatever she was
And what? What are the other options? Elvira's Haunted Hills.
Have you seen that?
Yes, I have.
And what'd you think?
And the same thing that you thought.
Yeah, it was okay. It was okay. Yeah.
It's weird.
I liked them attempting to ape Hammer horror movies.
Right.
I thought that was fun.
But outside of that, there was not much.
Not much.
On location in Bulgaria, though.
It certainly was. It had Richard O'Brien, and that's always welcome.
Richard O'Brien just doing what I guess Richard O'Brien does in anything non-Rocky Horror related, just screaming.
Scream and just being a genuine creep.
Yeah, like in Dungeons & Dragons.
He's real good at being a creep, man. Or Dark City.
I've never seen Dark City.
Sleep. He's great in that.
I mean,
that's a movie that if you're going to watch it, I'm going to make a very serious suggestion that you skip the opening 3 minutes of the movie where they tell you the entire mystery that the whole movie is predicated on solving.
Oh, really?
They straight out tell you at the fucking opening.
Was that like a director's cut thing?
I don't know who decided that they needed to explain the central mystery of their project in the opening 30 seconds of their film, but somebody made that call. And I was like, what? And I'm like, the rest is just watching going, uh-huh. Okay, I know what's going on. Yep. Oh, okay, that makes sense. Instead of like, wait, where am I? What is this crazy world?
It's one of those movies that has eluded me watching it. I think it's been on a list of movies to watch for the podcast a couple times. And it's just never come to fruition. I mean, Alex Proyas is...
I was going to say, yeah, it was Alex Proyas who did the Crow. It was like right in there, like same style.
Right. It was that and Dark City. And then he kind of just started doing
90s himself out of existence.
Gods of Egypt.
Oof. Some good performances.
I mean, what do you think about iRobot?
I like iRobot. I like it as its own thing that has nothing to do with that book.
Right. Completely removed from the story.
I liked Alan Tudyk's character. And, Will Smith was watchable, I guess. A little. Yeah. Some of those action sequences are really, really good in that movie.
When is Will Smith not watchable?
When he's acting, when he's going for the gold, when he's trying to get himself an award. I would rather drown myself than watch another Will Smith performance. There's that new film.
Are you talking like Pursuit of Happiness type stuff?
Absolutely Pursuit of Happiness. Or I'm very interested to watch a movie about the Williams sisters and tennis. But like, I cannot watch him glad handing his way through that role trying to fucking get an Academy Award again. I can't do it.
I mean, that does feel like what it feels like.
Yeah. A lot of false charm.
Even Eddie Redmayne knows what it's like to go for an award you maybe shouldn't, apparently.
Well, he got his.
But then he's all of a sudden saying it wasn't a good idea. Of course, he's not going to give that Oscar back, but...
Yeah, exactly. He can just keep going to Hogwarts or whatever the hell he's doing these days. He can stay there with his big, gross fish lips.
And whisper talking.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so anyway, my boyfriend's back.
Yeah, boy.
Anyway, I think Elvira is an example of how you could have done the 50s thing really well. They did it. It's done. It was done before this movie. Why are you, like, who cares? Stop mythologizing your childhood.
Well, and again, why write this movie the way you write it and then not set it in that time period? I just don't, because they're not taking it down like Elvira does.
No.
This is just like its own weird, like, they're kind of aping it, but not really.
Yeah. Ultimately, it should have just been a character piece where we like all the people and this insane thing is happening and, like, deal with it. Like, you know, the zombie portion of this is so grafted on. It feels like it doesn't even belong in this movie. Like,
well, it could have been anything.
Everyone's reaction to him, like, is a little too silly. For the movie to be taken seriously.
Or like shockingly nonchalant.
Very nonchalant. Like his murder in the convenience store is just like, whoops, kind of, you know, like slipped on a banana peel kind of thing. Like
he's eating Philip Seymour Hoffman and his friends are like, oh, okay. What?
Yeah. They're like, you know, the towns are, you got to arrest him, Sheriff. Why? Just cause he's a zombie. Well, he did kill and eat my son. Like, well, he's still got good qualities. Like what? The way we're describing it makes it sound like it's a fun and funny movie,
right,
but
it's not.
It is not like
not at all.
All of this stuff, like if it had been more pointed, not even dark necessarily. Like, I don't think it needed to be mean, but it needed one point of view and that's it. One storyline and that's it. Like, all of the other fall-de-rall with the townspeople and the sort of prejudice against zombies and all that, who cares?
Well, they don't really do anything with it.
No, it's just the same sitcom bullshit. Like I said at the beginning, feels like a sitcom writer, some guy who really doesn't have any investment in horror, like was like, oh, this is a way to crack that nut, the same nut that has been cracked a million fucking times in Hollywood. This is a fresh take.
He would go on to work on iZombie.
Shocker.
I think Mike White liked that show.
Did he?
I think so.
But then he liked this, so.
I don't know if he likes this.
He just moves as curiosity, like a little
This is one of those things where it's like, I wish I could like have like the Mike White fucking Batman symbol, like for Mike to just call him in here and be like, Mike, we gotta know, do you like this? I can't imagine anyone likes this movie.
Yeah.
Like we were joking about at the top, like I genuinely think we're the only two people that have rented this movie this year.
There's
Maybe
gotta
in
be
the
someone,
last decade, man.
There's got to be someone who was like 6 years old when this movie came out and they saw it on a loop on cable. And to them, it occupies a decent place in their heart. Maybe.
What movie is that for you?
Well, when I was like six?
That's like stuck on a loop in your head.
Oh, so there's so many.
That's fair.
But, you know, like, you know, Blues Brothers was stuck on a loop in my head for a long time. That
so
like
the guy
I saw
wearing
that
the orange whip shirt.
Right? Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm thinking about it right now. But like that definitely Creepshow, I watched a 100 million times. Phantom of the Paradise, I watched ad nauseum. And part of that is, and kids today just don't understand, like the advent of videotape technology allowed me to not only see these movies played on cable over and over and over again, but I taped it and continued on my own. And I'm sure there are some movies that are just like, people are like, what, why do you like that at all? But they're good for me. Monster Club, which we talked about, is a perfect example. Like it is what it is. I'm not claiming it's great. I wouldn't show it to some hardcore horror fan who had never seen it and go, wait till you see this, like at all.
Enjoy.
Right. But, you know, at least that's an anthology and at least one of those stories was really good, as opposed to none of the stories here in My Boyfriend's Back.
It's
and
no
you're going to be in trouble.
It's no Black Sabbath.
It's no Black Sabbath. That was okay. Black Sabbath. Again, I thought we were watching watching a different movie.
Yeah, I know. Me too. So would you suggest folks catch this one?
I would not.
Not even in the slightest? There's no redeeming qualities in this movie whatsoever.
No, that's not true. As I said, like all of those fucking actors are doing it, man. Like they got the tone that nobody else was sort of willing to support them with. Not the script and certainly not Bob Balaban as the director, where they established a tone that every time those guys are on screen and are performing deadpan, the movie works. And then the rest of it, which is the most of it, does not work at all. So I'm not saying the movie doesn't have redeeming qualities. I'm saying if it's on and you've got nothing better to do, then Austin Pendleton might make you chuckle. Other than that, like, I would not recommend the movie at all.
Other than that, ladies and gentlemen, there's always something better to do.
It definitely in this case. I have not seen the film Warm Hands, which I think treads on the same ground as this, that Nicholas Holt zombie movie where it's sort of a Romeo and Juliet thing. I have not seen the movie, so I can't speak to its quality, but you'd be better off watching that movie.
He's like a zombie in that movie, right?
Yeah, man, they're straight zombies, like fucking grunting and shit.
I was hoping for gay grunting zombies.
Well, that's what you hope for every movie.
That's what you said. They're straight zombies.
Straight zombies that are grunting
all the time.
This movie, he's a zombie in like the loosest term possible.
Nah, he's just not back a zombie
and,
at all.
He's just him and like, oh, my ear fell off.
He's him in gray face paint.
Pretty much. Which vacillates.
Gray and blue face paint.
Sometimes it's pretty severe and sometimes it's just not in the same shot.
When he's falling apart in that one scene, it's real bad.
Yeah, it's really bad.
It's
like great. I don't know who did the effects or the makeup of the movie, but great job. 93.
You know, counter this with Freaked. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. I mean, there's a movie that is kind of taken down the 50s as well. Like, but like so much more interesting, so much more innovative and fun, and like, you know, willing to experiment and go in those crazy directions and commit to them, as opposed to this one, which is just the standard falling in love with the girl story, which, as I said, like from the outset, there is a great movie to be mined out of this one. Like that idea that love will make you come back to life because you want to dance with your girl is pretty potent. But this movie didn't support that at all.
No, it didn't. And I think for me, ultimately, the most disappointing thing is I had this idea in my mind of what this movie could have been. And I think what this movie could have been in my mind is the same thing you were thinking about. And I think it's like you said, it is such a novel idea in a lot of ways, not necessarily novel, but I haven't seen it done.
I haven't seen it done like this, or rather like it should have been.
Like what it should have been done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever played the game Stubbs the Zombie? That's what this should have been.
I have not played that game.
It's kind of like this. It's a zombie game set in the 50s.
Hmm.
And you play as a zombie with like a fucking fedora on and shit. Like it's what this wanted to be. And I kept thinking like, okay, like the music in that game, one of the songs that they like used to advertise the game was Mr. Sandman. Like to give you an idea of kind of
where they're,
like this movie's trading in that same nostalgic bullshit.
Right. And either fucking go all the way with it or like excise it immediately. Like it was out of place in the particular story that they're telling here. Like, you know, I mean, I might have given the movie more of a pass had it been set in the 50s. And it was like, here's a general fucking takedown of 50s culture at the time. But even then, it's like there are no stakes. How about like there's a scene where the villagers are chasing our hero into the cemetery. The most lackadaisical chase scene I have ever seen in my life. No one in the crowd is more than trotting, including our hero running away from them, just kind of like ambling along, and then cut to the group of oldsters just kind of huffing and puffing behind him, like, wow, this is really exciting. I'm glad they committed this to film.
There's a lot of stuff in this, a lot of visual gags in this movie that don't work at all.
No, and there's some, you know, there are some good camera stuff in the movie too. Like Balaban's not a slouch necessarily. Like he does some interesting stuff with the camera, but not enough. He's not that much of a visual stylist.
No, and this movie is a definite skip for me as well. It's not good.
Yeah,
it's just it's a good concept executed poorly.
Yeah,
ultimately. So poorly that it is not worth watching at all.
Don't do it.
It's a shame. Don't do it. Don't do it, bud. Whenever I hear someone say, don't do it. Speaking of don't do it, let's take a break and we'll play a preview for the first Culture Cast of December.
Once upon a time, a long way from here and a long way from now, there was a tiny village where everything, the houses and the carts, the bridges, and the barns, everything, all had points on them. In fact, it was so full of points that even the people had points. The people, right there on top of their heads. And it didn't seem strange at all, because that's the way life was in the village. That's the way it always had been. And for all anybody knew, that's the way it always would be. As you might have already guessed, the main activity of the village was making points. And needless to say, business was brisk and the competition was competitive.
Town and these are the people. This is the town where the people all stay. This is the town and these are the people. That's the way they wanted it. That's the way it's going to stay.
And while the farmers kept the villagers' bodies nourished with pointed crops, the artist colony in the community, as in all communities, did their part to keep minds and souls filled with new points to view.
That's right. On the first Culture Cast of December, we're going to be talking about The Point.
What is that?
It's a Harry Nilsson cartoon thing.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that. I saw that a million years ago. But yeah,
there's
like
three different narrators.
Yeah. Unusual. I would have to rewatch it. I love Harry Nilsson.
I was expecting a response from you, so when I didn't get one, I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't sort of process what point we were referring to here. Not that I know of any other movies named Point, but certainly that's not one swimming in my consciousness.
So is it good? You don't remember?
I liked it, but I was really stoned.
What are you going to do?
Take that as you will.
That's fair.
Which isn't to say that any movie is good when you're stoned, because some movies are really bad when you're stoned. So
yeah. Any Mission Impossible movie is not good when you're stoned.
No, it's a little too intense.
Oh my God. The one where he's on the plane, like on the outside of the plane. Like it was too much for me.
Too much.
This was
wow.
Like, this was like a couple years ago when I was just like starting to get into being high. So like I was super high watching it. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's like fucking.
I used to think that getting high would make any movie better. And then the movie that broke me was Waterworld.
Why?
Listen, I don't walk out of movies often. Obviously, I did with my boyfriend's back. That's another one where I was just like, I don't know. I got halfway through and I went, this is just garbage. Like it made me just want to go watch The Road Warrior, which is what it was doing, but poorly and wet.
That's fair. Hey, you know what? I didn't ask you as we come to the close of this episode before I let you plug your own fantastic show. I will, and I have to give you a caveat here. What is your favorite zombie movie that's not Dawn of the Dead?
Return of the Living Dead.
Okay, other than those two.
No, there are no other zombie movies.
Come on.
There are no other zombie movies.
At all.
Shaun of the Dead is a good one.
Okay.
Shaun of the Dead's real good. And even though they don't have any of the protagonists being zombies, is the perfect example of what you can do as far as a romantic story and tell that story well in the midst of all of the carnage that they take very seriously.
That's fair.
I like that movie quite a bit.
I haven't seen it in a while.
I don't know. Are there others to consider even? Like,
I guess not really. I mean, when I think about zombie movies, I really do. When I think of a zombie movie that I want to watch, I do really just go back to Return of the Living Dead.
Yeah. I mean, I showed
it to my parents recently, like, and they weren't like aghast at it. They kind of enjoyed it. So like,
yeah, it's cause it's a smart, funny, fucking cool little movie. Like, right. that establishes a universe and fucking runs with it. Those two, I like Night of the Living Dead a lot, you know, it's pretty much Romero across the board. Like for some reason, his tone and his, point of view are always good. Even the lesser ones. I mean, they got pretty lesser there at the end, but
how many did we have past Day of the Dead?
We had Day of the Dead, then we had Land of the Dead with Dennis Hopper.
Yep.
Yeah, which has moments that are pretty good, but overall is just feels incorrect.
In a skyscraper or something.
Yeah. I forget what they call it in the movie, but like, yeah, that's Romero was. Got a little too heady, a little too high on the social commentary portion of his early movies, which I don't think he was necessary. I mean, you're making a movie set in a mall with zombies. Yes, you're taking on consumer culture, but that was never the point of that movie. And like it got overpraised for that. And then I think he was attempting to sort of start from the social commentary and then craft a movie around it. And that's what he kept doing, unfortunately. So Land of the Dead, you know, the haves and have nots, we get it. And then there was Diary of the Dead, the sort of point of view thing.
I don't know. I'm asking you because I've
not good.
I haven't seen that one.
Not good. And then there was one more. It was like a almost like a prequel to that one, which I can't even remember the title of, but I'm good not remembering.
I'm good not remembering. I think for me, my favorite zombie movie has to be Return of the Living Dead. It's just so good.
Yeah, it's a ride, man. And that's the other thing. Like,
it takes the Romero movies and does what I would have done with it. Just like being fucking weird, just super weird.
It's funny because, like, you know, Romero was often labeled like, you know, an exploitation director because he was working sort of without the system, and he was also trading in storylines that were sort of out there at the moment. This Return of the Living Dead feels like the exploitation movie of the exploitation movie. Like if Dawn of the Dead was an exploitation movie, this is really the exploitation movie of that I'm using the word exploitation, which conjures up $2 sets and everyone's wardrobe they came from home with. That's not the case with either of these movies. They're very well appointed. They're very serious, good movies. Particularly Return of the Living Dead, like, you know, they had a budget of like, what, 35 cents and some Bazooka Joe chewing gum, like, to make that movie. And like, it's a great looking movie.
It has some of my favorite zombies.
Certainly.
Tarman.
Fuck, man. You can't get better than that guy.
Half Dog.
Oh, Split Dogs.
Yeah, Split Dogs are great.
Like, that scene is fucking beyond the pale. Like, it's really good. Like,
yeah. Yeah,
and you know, I've said this before, like, and I stand by it. Like, people think of that movie as a comedy because they have during the end credits, like the sort of greatest hits, like the greatest funny lines from the movie. Like, remember, this was a comedy, because it is not a comedy. It is one of the darkest movies I've ever seen. Like, that movie spirals into darkness.
Yeah,
and it's very funny along the way, but very funny in, like, you know, the way you laugh when somebody close has died in a silly way. Like, you know, like it's a bit nervous laughter throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't, that's the thing. I don't consider it funny either, because it's not funny. Like, the way the movie ends is pretty, it's pretty bleak.
Yeah, but like a scene like that with the split dogs, like they introduce it, and then when the trioxin gets released and that dog has come to life, like Frank going, I'm going to kill it, and grabbing the crutch and like smashing it, like, it is not funny in that sequence. When they recontextualize it at the end, the sound the dog makes when it gets hit, like, is like, oh, this is what a goof. Like, that wasn't a goof. Those two guys were going through some shit at that moment, and we were there with them.
They become zombies.
Yeah, man, they already are, technically, and they don't even know it. That movie's hardcore. I love that movie.
The Easter eggs have hatched.
Yes. Unfortunately, one of the eggs is hatched. Oh, no, sir.
I love that music at the end. Oh God, just everything. Yeah. It really is. Why? You know what? The reason we didn't talk about it on this episode is because I've already talked about it. But you know what? It just bears mentioning because it would be a better use of your time than this fucking movie.
Yeah, man. Don't watch this movie. I mean, if you need a comedy zombie movie, go watch Shaun of the Dead. And if you want a really good zombie movie, go watch Return of the Living Dead.
So where can people find you, Father Malone?
If you're actually looking for me, I would go to fathermalone.com. That is links to all the stupid bullshit I do on YouTube. It has a link to my podcast, Dark Destinations, which is a half-hour radio drama that I write and produce, and I'm rather fond of, and I think you might enjoy it. And you can also find links to the ones that Chris and I did about Tales from the Crypt, Chronicles from the Crypt, about the HBO television series, and A Dreams for Sale, which we do with our friend Mike White, about the Twilight Zone 85 revival.
A true nightmare, one might even say.
It's becoming that, yeah.
Yeah. The real question I have for you, in a scenario that I have seen a film that your channel talks about.
Yeah. Oh, fuck you.
Would the appropriate response, be to heckle you on your own YouTube channel?
Yeah, please do that. You know, I haven't done a You've Never Seen in I don't know how long, man. Like, you know, like, people are still hammering me about it. I'm just like, okay, enjoy.
I love how every often someone just gets it up their craw. It's just like, what is wrong with you?
No, I mean, at this point, I enjoy when they're actually offended by the notion that they haven't seen the movie. Like, that's
you telling me that you have seen something that I never have.
I have seen this movie many times. Like, okay, dude.
With the chick for magnet you. Here's handle Wampa 1.
Yeah, here's a cookie. Just calm down.
Oh, man. Yeah, You've Never Seen. Boy, they take that shit literally on the internet, man.
Sure do.
Bunch of Draxes on the internet, man.
Yeah. No subtlety, anyway.
No subtlety. As for me, you can find me at cstachew.com, cstachiw.com. That's my website with my link tree. Things that Father Malone has mentioned and things that I have worked on separately, including Scary Stories We Tell, which Father Malone was on recently, a couple times, talking about some weird shit.
Yeah, I like weird shit.
Yeah, get out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some real
talk about
shit.
That movie instead.
Yeah. But that's where you can find us. Father Malone, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure.
I would say you enjoyed it. I would say we had a good time. We had a good time talking about it.
Yeah.
Collectively, we're $8 lighter.
God damn you, Touchstone. Is that even a company anymore?